You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter, Gregor Chisholm. And Gregor, the winter meetings are in the rearview mirror now. The Blue Jays, as far as what they did, they continue to kind of make low-risk deals, make smaller deals this offseason to kind of help out this team to get better. One guy that it seemed like they really would have loved to add in the outfield that wouldn't have been one of those deals would have been Dexter Fowler. Fowler officially heading to the St. Louis Cardinals. So that's one swing and a miss, I guess, as far as the Blue Jays go this offseason and this hot stove season. How do they regroup now that Fowler's a Cardinal?
Yeah, it's in some ways very similar to what the Blue Jays did with Edwin Encarnacion when it seemed like they moved on from him. He was really their plan A, and in a lot of ways, Dexter Fowler was kind of a plan B in terms of adding a marquee guy. And when they moved on from Encarnacion, they spread the wealth a little bit. Steve Pierce got a two-year deal. Obviously, they're committing some dollars to Justin Smoke next year as well. I think you're probably going to see a similar approach in the outfield, where they're going after probably some mid-tier guys. I still expect it to be through free agency as opposed to trade, simply because I think they really want to keep a lot of the assets that they have in-house. They don't want to part with them, so they'd rather spend the money, and clearly they have money to spend because they made a long-term offer to Dexter Fowler, and it seems like they have upwards of $25 million, so they're going to spread that around a few different guys to try and fill those holes and probably get two guys for what you would have paid Dexter Fowler, who would have been the top priority.
Some of those guys that are available, Gregor, are guys that were on the roster a year ago. They wouldn't necessarily fit into what you were just saying, but Bautista's still out there. It seems like there's not a lot of interest there, but who knows if he continues. If the stock drops, I guess. Mike Saunders is still out there. Are they more likely to go other routes, though, like the Brandon Mosses, Rajay Davises out there?
Yeah, Brandon Moss is certainly an intriguing guy to a certain extent, and Ben Revere on a bounce-back type season is an interesting guy as well. And I think those are going to be the kind of guys that they're going to look at. And, I think they have probably circled back on Michael Saunders to kind of take a look at his market as well. The Bautista ones are probably is the one that's not going to happen. I don't think this team is prepared to go more than a year on Bautista, and he's looking for something like that, and he's going to wait it out until he thinks he can find an offer that he's willing to go for. So I think it's going to be spread around a little bit, and I think Brandon Moss is kind of a perfect example of someone that they're kind of looking for, a little bit of power upside. In a lot of ways, he's got a very similar case to the one that Michael Saunders has. Both guys had incredible first halves. The second half didn't go the way that they wanted to, and that's why they're available on these kind of low-risk type contracts.
How much can we look into the moves that the Blue Jays have made here as opposed to moves they've made in the past and just kind of see that this is somewhat of a changing of the philosophy with Shapiro and Atkins in the front office versus the old regime?
Yeah, I think, Alex Anthopoulos really kind of had a high-risk, high-reward kind of approach, and we saw that over the years. We saw it not work out in some big blockbuster deals. And then we saw it obviously culminate in the 2015 season where everything seemed to go the Blue Jays way. And, he shot big. And this regime does seem to take a little bit more of a moderate approach, especially, I don't think it's always going to be that way. There are guys that they will go long-term on. Obviously, they made, a four-year deal to Encarnacion. They made a long-term offer to Dexter Fowler. There are guys who they will go long-term on. But I think they're going to be really careful and go few and far between and with that. And I think they're going to fill out the rest of the roster with some short-term deals because this is also a team that still has a lot of big contracts coming the way later on with Troy Tulowitzki still signed long-term, Russell Martin for another 3 years. They got a lot of big money tied up later on. I think they're going to be careful that they don't paint themselves into a corner by adding guys. It's kind of an emergency backup when their top guys don't end up with the team.
There were some rumors around the winter meetings about, as far as trading goes, trading a pitcher maybe to bring in an outfield, an impact outfielder. One of the rumors that was out there was for Charlie Blackmon with the Rockies and the possibility of maybe a Marcus Stroman. Seems like that wasn't a rumor started from the Blue Jays side of things, right? There's not a lot of interest in trading a Marcus Stroman.
No, and I think what happens there is, the Blue Jays, whenever they're trying to go, they're making inquiries on a lot of the top guys who are available because they want to see what the asking prices are. And, you know, Charlie Blackmon is a perfect kind of a fit for what this team needs in terms of an outfielder. But the issue is that, you know, whenever they're making calls, it's guys that they're not willing to give up that other teams really want. And because they don't have the prospect capital in the upper levels, they've got to give some talent off the big league roster. And obviously Stroman's a guy that other teams are going to ask for in return. And from a Jays perspective, I just don't think there's any way it's really going to be able to happen. I mean, they'd have to be totally blown away. This team, as it's constructed right now, is really built around that starting rotation, and they don't have any depth to speak of after that. And so if you trade a Stroman to fill another hole, you're creating a really big one in the rotation. And for a team that's built around starting pitching right now, that's not a direction I would expect them to take.
One more thing to touch on with you, Gregor. The Rule 5 draft is the end of the winter meetings every year on Thursday morning, and it's a chance for teams to kind of pluck off prospects, not necessarily prospects, but guys that other teams haven't protected as far as their 40-man roster goes. A year ago, the Blue Jays had great success with Joe Biagini. What a lift he gave to the bullpen, and he was a Rule 5 guy. They go with another pitcher in 2016. They get Glenn Sparkman from the Royals. He's a right-handed pitcher. Do you know much about Sparkman, I guess? I think he's coming off Tommy John surgery. And is there a chance he could be Biagini too?
Yeah, and I think the Tommy John surgery is one reason why the Blue Jays thought that he was not protected and that he was available in this draft. And, he came back from that last year, so there shouldn't be any repercussions of that going into this year, and probably should be, you know, and now that he's a year removed, should be that much stronger. And this is really just another, shot in the dark in terms of trying to find someone with upside for the bullpen as well. The Blue Jays have multiple spots available down there, and so why not take a chance? And it's a guy who has started before in his career. The Blue Jays will be looking at him in this particular role as a reliever, and so they think the velocity can play up a little bit. He's a guy who can hit mid-90s. And so it's a shot, you know. A lot of times these don't work out, but all you have to do is look back at the Biagini situation last year and realize that you might as well at least take your chance and see what you can come up with.
Yeah, and it's a low-risk situation. You have to pay $100,000 to the Royals to get Sparkman, and if you end up returning him to the Royals, you actually get $50,000 of that back. So it's not a big risk. That's double the money it used to be, but still certainly a small risk and the chance for big rewards if it works out like Joe Biagini did a year ago. Great stuff as always, Gregor. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Blue Jays edition. For Gregor Chisholm, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Orioles reporter, Brittany Giroli. And Brittany, the winter meetings are behind us. You've made the short trip back up to Baltimore area, I guess, from National Harbor, Maryland, where the winter meetings were. The winter meetings were a busy time for almost every team in the American League East, it seemed. The Yankees signing Aroldis Chapman, the Red Sox trading for Chris Sale and making a slew of moves. The Rays have even now signed Wilson Ramos. Jays have made a bunch of moves already this offseason, but the Orioles still pretty quiet, and it doesn't seem to bother Dan Duquette at all. He seems to be as patient as any front office guy in the major leagues, and they've proven that year after year. But where are they right now, you think, knowing what everyone else in the division has kind of done?
They're okay with it. Yeah. You know, they are a team that moves at their own pace, and it pretty much every indication is that they're going to continue to do that this winter. So they are trying to aggressively add a catcher. You've heard a little bit more about that in the coming days. They remain kind of in the same situation that they were with Mark Trumbo last week at the winter meetings. And they know that they aren't the Yankees and they aren't the Red Sox. And Dan Duquette and Buck Showalter talked about it last week in National Harbor. They're the Orioles. They're going to do things their way. And I know for people complaining about money and payroll, they're coming off a record-spending winter, and you look at their payroll, even if they add nobody, they're going to be, again, higher than they were a year ago. So they're right where they need to be, they feel like, and they're not going to let these outside moves kind of dictate what they do.
You mentioned adding catching. Were they at all involved with Wilson Ramos being right near where he kind of called home the last few years with the Nationals?
Yeah, I mean, they were certainly interested, but yeah. I think when you look at what they'd like to do ideally, a guy like Wellington Castro fits a little bit better They want to get a guy who's going to plug a hole before Chancisco is ready. One of their top prospects is going to spend the year at AAA, or at least going to start the year at AAA. So they want to be able to get a guy on a year two max. And I think when you look at what fits them and where they would best kind of be suited in that direction, Wellington Castillo is certainly a guy who's high on their radar. He's seeking a three-year deal. I know they liked Ramos. They liked a bunch of catchers out there. They still remain cautiously hopeful that maybe they'll be able to work things out with Matt Waiters, but I didn't hear anything too strong on the former Nats catcher.
Mark Trumbo is obviously the big storyline still for this Orioles team and the hope of bringing him back, and it sounds like the best offer Trumbo has is still 4 years from the Orioles. Not sure of what the money is with that. This is starting to feel a little bit like Chris Davis a year ago. I know the Orioles don't want this to linger and last as long as that did. But on the other hand, maybe the longer it goes, the more likely it is that he does return to the Orioles.
Maybe, kind of like Chris Davis a year ago. But, yeah, that's kind of what they're hoping, that the market for Trumbo kind of falls, and he falls into their lap. And they offered him a four-year deal. The two sides were okay with the length, but I think Trumbo's camp wants more money. It's rumored to be in that $75 to $80 million is what they're looking for. And that's a little much. It's going to spread the Orioles very thin and not enable them to do some of the other things they wanted to do. Because even if they do go out and they get Mark Trumbo, they still want to upgrade that outfield defense a little bit. They still really want a left-handed bat. They need a catcher, as I mentioned. There are things that they need to get done. And they've got a lot of guys like Zach Britton, Manny Machado, Chris Tillman that are going to get big raises in arbitration. So they feel like they made the best offer they could. Now they're going to wait around and see how it plays out. Keep in mind, Trumbo's got that qualifying offer attached to him, too. So a lot of times, those guys are really hurt by that. And if they wait around too long, then that's how the Orioles have been able to scoop up some of these guys, like a Nelson Cruz a few years ago.
How careful do they have to be? And I guess it sounds like they've kind of made their offer and they're just going to wait. But if they did think to raise it a little bit, how careful do you have to be not to start negotiating, or not negotiating, but kind of dealing with yourself? If you're the only team that's given that offer and he's wanting more, you want to wrap it up, but you don't want to be bidding against yourself.
Exactly. And I think that's how they felt with Chris Davis. And they just ended up waiting and waiting and waiting. And then they ownership really wanted him and they paid him. And could they have paid him $20 million less? Probably. When you look at the fact that there really was no market out there. And Scott Boras wouldn't even comment on the market outside of the Orioles at the Chris Davis signing. So it seems like with Trumbo, there's a little bit more interest. The money isn't nearly the astronomical figure that Davis's camp was seeking. So I think there is some interest, but you're right. You got to be careful this time of year. Mark Trumbo is a very good player, but he's coming off of a career year. So you don't want to pay him thinking that he's going to give you the year he gave you last year for the next 4 years. That's just not going to happen.
You mentioned adding more outfielders, and they actually added a couple of outfielders in the Rule 5 draft. Oftentimes, it's kind of a afterthought of the winter meetings on Thursday morning, but the Orioles take a couple of guys, Anthony Santander and Anuari Tavares, two outfielders, which is interesting because with Rule 5 picks, you have to keep these guys. If you're going to keep them, they have to stay on your major league roster for the entire year, which doesn't seem like a likely thing with two outfielders. Is this a case where you bring these two guys into spring training, you see what you have, and maybe you hold on to one of them and return the second one?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's a gamble, and they're trying to see what they have. And I think when you look at a guy like Santander, who they got from the Indians organization, he's never played above Class A. He's only 22 years old. So they think that there's ability there with his bat. He's a switch hitter. They want to kind of get a look at him. But he's probably a longer shot, I would think, right now than a guy like Tavares. Tavares played in Boston, AAA and AA. So he's been a little bit closer to that level of competition. They like his speed. They like his defense. He runs very well. And he was an Eastern League All-Star on a very good AA Portland team. So I think when you look at these two guys, they're trying to add depth. And this doesn't change the fact that they need outfielders at the major league level. But they have been successful in years past that Rule 5 draft, T.J. McFarland, Ryan Flaherty, just last year with Joey Rickard. So they're trying to strike gold again and see what they have. And these two young kids have a lot of upside. They're both in very good systems, and these teams couldn't protect them, so now the Orioles get to get a fair look at them.
Yeah, and Joey Rickard was obviously tremendous early in the season. Reality kind of set in a little bit, but he was able to hang around, and now the Orioles in 2017 can send him down to the minors and kind of continue to work on his development, and you hope you can do that again. It's a great way to add depth. That's certainly true as far as the Rule 5 draft. One more thing I wanted to talk to you about, Brittany, was the whole Jose Bautista situation that came on late in the winter meetings, where basically Dan Duquette saying that they weren't interested in Jose Bautista because the Orioles fan base doesn't like him, which is funny. And I thought it was interesting that Duquette actually went out and he said it numerous times. This wasn't just like a throwaway line. Where did this come from? Because I can't imagine that it's actually true.
No, I mean, they can't afford him, one. Two, right. He's old, and three, he doesn't really fit what they're looking to do. I think Dan Duquette had some fun with it, kind of tongue-in-cheek, saying that fans hate him, which they do. He's not popular in Baltimore. He's not popular in many markets outside of the current team that he's on, I think. But, you know, it obviously sparked a lot of headlines, made for a lot of interesting fodder. But certainly, if he was a guy that the Orioles thought that they could afford that was going to make their team better, and was batting fifth wearing the black and orange, fans would embrace him and support him. So it was fun. Duquette continued to say it. You know, fans hate him. He's a villain. I kind of asked him, well, what if that villain's price range drops? He laughed and said, maybe we'll have to ask the fans. So it was kind of much ado about nothing, but certainly an interesting headline, probably the biggest headline for the Orioles at the winter meetings last week.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny just because it's Dan Duquette, who you never think of as the guy that's going to come out and say something like that. Like, he's usually
exactly.
So keeps everything close to the vest, doesn't say anything, and then he comes out with that one, which was certainly funny and entertaining. All right, that's going to do it for another edition of MLB.com Extras. This has been our Orioles edition. For Brittany Giroli, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Yankees reporter Brian Hoke. And Brian, the Yankees struck late in the winter meetings, but they struck big, bringing back Aroldis Chapman, obviously spending big money for him, but they have him locked in now for a long time for a relief pitcher. But it seems like this is just a guy the team has a lot of confidence in, having him for most of the year in 2016, and felt comfortable opening up the bank account for a closer.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was their top priority, and they really made no secret about that. They had spoken pretty clearly that they intended to sign Chapman, and then they obviously made an offer to Kenley Jansen as well, but he was really more of a backup plan. I think that Chapman really impressed them. He came over, obviously he had some baggage with the off-field stuff, but he came in, he handled himself well, he was hardworking, he was a good teammate. He settled what he had to do, he rode out the suspension, and when he was back on the mound, he pitched really well, and they were able to obviously get a big haul for him in July with the understanding that, hey, maybe this is not goodbye. Maybe something will happen, and you go win a World Series with the Cubs and come on back, and that's exactly what happened. They spent a lot to do it. He's going to get an opt-out after year three, but for at least in the next 3 years, Aroldis Chapman back in the Bronx. They've got that 100-mile-an-hour fastball in the ninth inning, and they can work backwards from there and really solidify that bullpen.
It's one of those situations when you talk about the opt-out as well, where it's not necessarily a bad thing for the team either. You talk about a reliever. I mean, obviously, if he doesn't pitch well, he's not going to take that opt-out. But either way, a guy that throws that hard, maybe 3 years he opts out, and it's best for the Yankees if they don't have him at the end of that contract.
I guess that's always a possibility. But I tell you, I think that if the Yankees thought that he was going to physically fall apart or not pitch well, they would never have given that contract. I think that they felt very comfortable going 5 years and $86 million for him. They saw the excitement that he gave to the crowd when he would come in. Unfortunately for the Yankees, they didn't have a whole lot of save situation for him, but he still pitched well when he came in, not as many as they would have wanted. But they get to try that again in 2017, 18, and 19. And Tim, I think we talked about it down at the winter meetings. This is one of the best pure athletes I've ever covered, and that includes position players, pitchers, everything. I think that this guy is built like a wide receiver. I mean, he is strong. He works hard. I mean, it's no surprise that he throws 103, 104, 105 miles an hour. He is a specimen. He is different than any other pitcher in the game, I think. And I think that if he ran a 40-yard dash against Brett Gardner and Jacoby Ellsbury, he'd win. He's that good of an athlete. So I think you know, you never know for sure with pitching, but the Yankees feel like they have a pretty safe bet with this guy.
So they give Chapman $86 million over 5 years. Reports are the Dodgers have reached an agreement, $80 million for Kenley Jansen. And Jansen was a guy who there's a draft pick attached to him. Obviously, the Dodgers don't have to give up that draft pick since he was their guy. But you do the math on that, $80 million or $86 million with the pick. Does that mean in this day and age in baseball, a first-round draft pick is worth $6 million?
Well, I guess it was to the Florida Marlins or the Miami Marlins. I'm not sure. But the Yankees were very clear that they did not want to lose that pick if they didn't have to. You see their first-round pick history over the last few years, and it's been checkered. They've got some hits and misses. But I think all things considered, they'd rather have Aroldis Chapman pay some of that money and get the 16th pick in next year's draft rather than lose that pick to the Dodgers to have Kenley Jansen.
And the beauty is they get Aroldis Chapman and you could say Gleyber Torres for that amount of money because obviously they traded him for Torres at the trade deadline. Quite a move by the Yankees to really, for a team that was quiet most of the winter meetings, you read articles about winners and losers and they're now suddenly included in most of the winter meetings winners discussions because they got the guy that they wanted to get. The winter meetings always ends with the Rule 5 draft, Brian, and the Yankees, I don't know if I've seen a team lose as many players in the major league phase of the Rule 5 draft. What it does say, though, is it says a lot about where this organization is now as far as the minor league system. The Yankees lose four players in the major league phase. That means they had four players that they had to make a decision on, and they couldn't protect. They didn't have room on the 40-man roster, and these guys were available. You'll only see that from a team with huge depth within the organization. So I'm not going to get into the players they lost. They're obviously players that the Yankees valued less than they value other players. But just the fact that they lost that many players says all you need to know about this Yankee system.
Well, yeah, and what Brian Cashman was saying as he checked out of the winter meetings was it's only going to get worse. You only have 40 spots, and you can't protect everybody. And they came to the winter meetings with one spot open. They used one of them to finalize the deal with Matt Holliday. They're still going to have to clear a spot to put Chapman back on the 40. So the Yankees feel pretty confident that they're going to get some of those guys back. You know, last year, Jake Cave, an outfielder, was taken by the Reds, and he went to camp with Cincinnati and wound up coming back to the Yankee system. And they think they're going to be able to get some of these guys back. But the one big name of the guys they lost is Luis Torrens, who is a very promising catcher but has been sideline due to injuries, hasn't played above A ball. So he'll go to camp with the Padres, I believe. He was traded from the team that drafted him, and then they think they'll get him back. So I don't think you see too many guys make the jump from A ball to the big leagues, but it is an indication of how strong the Yankees farm system is, that they have so many worthy players that other teams want to bring in and take a look at in spring training and have a shot to make that 25-man roster going in the opening day.
Yeah, and I would think Torrens comes back because it's one thing to stash a Rule 5 player in your bullpen or maybe have a fifth outfielder. But as far as a catcher goes, that's pretty tricky, how you make your way through the season keeping an extra catcher on your roster, even for the Padres, who obviously aren't expected to contend. That would be quite a task for them. The Yankees have signed Ruben Tejada to a minor league deal, a spring training invite, I believe, as well. Obviously, a guy that was a big part of the Mets for years, always could do it half the game, but maybe couldn't put it fully together as far as the glove and the bat. But an interesting move by the Yankees, at least, a guy that's familiar with New York, and it'll be interesting to see how he performs down in Tampa in the spring.
Yeah, he's a guy they've liked for a while. Obviously, it's never a bad thing to have a guy who's played across town and understands what New York is all about. Yeah, he'll have a chance to come in. I think that they're looking at Ronald Torres as that backup infield guy. And Rob Refsnyder will get some reps at second and third again in the spring, assuming he's on the roster. But you always want to have depth of competition. So it really, no risk there. Bring him in and see what happens in spring training. And if there's an injury or maybe he outperforms, he can grab a spot. So, but, yeah, he's a guy who's late in the big leagues, you know what you're getting pretty much with Ruben Tejada, and you see what happens in spring training. You take a look at him and get him his 30, 40 at-bats and see where you are.
Listening to Brian Cashman, it sounds like upgrades to the starting rotation, or really additions to the starting rotation, unlikely at this point. I guess really the cost too high to really upgrade, And to a degree, I guess they kind of like what they have there. So what is left to do this offseason, this hot stove season? Is there a trade out there? I know Brett Gardner will forever be on the trading block as far as rumors go. Is there a deal to be done? What's left for the Yankees to do?
Well, I think that if they could trade Gardner for starting pitching, they would. I think they look at that rotation, and, you know, we've gone over it a lot, but Masahiro Tanaka, Michael Pineda, and CeCe Sabathia are your only locks, and then you've got five guys battling for the last two spots. If you can iron one of those out and plug somebody in, then I think you're in a good position there. They obviously have some outfield depth. Aaron Hicks is looking for a way to break in. Aaron Judge is probably going to be handed the starting right field job. They really want to go with the kids at right field and first base. So it's an option. They don't have to move Gardner. I think they were in this position last year, and like you mentioned, a couple of years before this as well. But he's out there. He's being dangled. He's got an affordable contract. He's attractive for a lot of different reasons. So teams know that Gardner's out there. Cashman said he's still getting hits on him, but obviously nothing has matched up as of yet. The Yankees are not going to trade Chase Headley. They're going to stick there. I think they dangled him out there and didn't like the return. They found out that they were probably going to have to eat most of the money left to Headley, and at that point, you're probably just better off plugging him in as your starting third baseman. So I think that's it, minor tweaks like that. Obviously, you get the minor league signings like Ruben Tejada, but unless there's a big move with Brett Gardner, I think this roster might be pretty close to set.
Great stuff, Brian. It's going to be a slow rest of the winter for you. Good to hear.
Well, you know what? Famous last words, and that could change in a hurry. So stay tuned.
All right. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Yankees edition. For Brian Hoke, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with Dwayne Statz, Rays broadcaster, filling in this week for Bill Chastain. Dwayne, thanks, first of all, for joining us.
It's my pleasure, and there's a lot of pressure here, you know, filling in for Bill Chastain because he's so glib and insightful. And so I'll do my very best and hope that we can get through it, and we'll look forward to Bill's return.
Yeah, and we got to do the podcast in person a week ago with Bill Chastain at the winter meetings, but now all the teams have left the D.C. area, headed back to their markets. As far as the Rays go, they didn't get a deal done technically at the winter meetings, but officially here on Monday afternoon as we record this podcast, Wilson Ramos is a member of the Tampa Bay Rays, and this is a I think it's a huge signing for the Rays when you look at catcher a year ago, and it just never kind of came about what they were hoping to get out of their catchers. Now you get Wilson Ramos, a guy that if he hadn't gotten injured at the end of 2016, I would think there's no chance the Rays are able to sign him. But because of the injury and because of their willingness to I guess, be patient, here you have a guy who was one of the best catchers in Major League Baseball in 2016, and he's going to be with the Rays the next 2 years.
Yeah, and that's a major addition for this club. It seems that at least half the teams in baseball are looking for catching, and the Rays have, it seems, forever been looking for a solution behind the plate with varying degrees of success and frustration. And so Wilson Ramos, I think that's a major plus for this team. You know, the knee is an issue, the ACL there. Some discussion about whether he'll be able to play the first couple months of the season, but and who knows, but we're already hearing, at least from him, that he thinks he could DH for this team before that and be back earlier than some people think. And all I can say is that this team is generally very cautious about things like that. So I'm not sure they're going to be in a hurry even to have him DH that early. But they can wait a couple months on a quality catcher like Wilson Ramos. He could make a big difference on this team.
Yeah, and a guy that's in his prime, 29 years old, the slash line a year ago, by far his best year in the big leagues, 307, 354. 496. He hit 22 homers, Dwayne, 80 RBIs, and really was a key member of the middle of that Nationals lineup. It's a knee, so obviously the catching will take time, but besides being a great guy offensively, and he really took off after, I think, having LASIK eye surgery last offseason, Beyond that, he's also great defensively. And when you have a Rays team that really focuses on, obviously, that starting rotation, how key is that to have a guy that, does a great job with pitch framing and everything that Ramos brings defensively?
Yeah, I don't think it could be more important than any other part of this club. And you're right. When they've been successful, a lot of things have to go right, but it all begins with pitching and then protecting that pitching with good defense. And frankly, that was an issue for this team a year ago. There were some miscalculations, I think, defensively about this team. They have been addressed, and this is a big step forward for them. And so I'm encouraged by seeing this development essentially come out of the winter meetings, because catching is a big deal, as well as the rest of the defense. And I think they've done a pretty good job of shoring up the inner defense on the infield with a couple of switches and a move here and there. And so I think I think they're moving in the right direction. Still some work to be done.
Now, how do you think they will handle those first couple of months without Ramos behind the plate? Obviously, they have Luke Maley. They have Casale still. So you have two guys who are major league catchers. So it seems like that's an easy fit for the first couple months. But then there's going to be a big decision to be made once Ramos is healthy.
Yeah, I think so. I think what it does, it gives Casale an opportunity, again, to establish himself. And the same thing with Maley. You know, they both got a pretty good look last year. And so this will not hurt them. And I think over a period of a month or two, I think they'll be happy to go with what they have there, with the anticipation of Ramos coming back to give this team a big lift, you know, a couple of months into the season. So I think what they will do beyond that, you know, I think we touched on it briefly the last time we were together about that inner defense in the infield and Kiermaier in center. But, you know, they need to do some things with the outfield as well on the corners. And I think that's where they're going to use, or at least they have the opportunity perhaps to use a starting pitcher to add to this club in that regard, either on one of the corner spots. They seem to think Souza is going to be okay, and at least for now going in to play right field on a more or less everyday basis. But they do need to get some depth in the outfield and at DH and in the bullpen. So they still have some work to do.
It seems like the one pitcher that everybody would be interested in acquiring is Chris Archer. It also sounds like that's maybe the least likely guy the Rays would like to trade. If the right deal came along, could you see them pulling the trigger on Archer, or are they set on trading a different starter?
Well, I think if the right deal came along, you know, if the right deal came along, I think you could look at them trading anyone on this roster. Yeah. I truly mean that. I actually, however, think the most likely pitcher to be moved would be Smiley. I think because he's going to be due $7 million or so. There has been a lot of interest in him, even down at the trading deadline when we heard a lot about Archer and we heard a lot about Odorizzi. There was significant interest in Smiley, and I think he would be the first guy probably in serious discussions on both sides, I think by the Rays and by other clubs.
The team could also use some bullpen help. You mentioned trading for an outfielder, and you look around the league at possible guys that would be good fits and that are definitely on the block and that the Rays could afford. And one guy that I know that I see that I know the team is looking to trade guys that are going to be free agents next year would be Jerod Dyson with the Royals. Obviously, he doesn't bring a ton with the bat, but great defensively. Is he a guy that would fit in with what the Rays do?
I think that type of player would absolutely be that would be an element that they would be interested in. What I thought at the end of the year, obviously, you win only 68 games. There are a lot of areas that you could address. But I really thought that at some point, if they could address the outfield spot and then get a guy who could hit, say, ninth. For an example, Desmond Jennings turned out to be a disappointment here. They thought maybe he could hit down the lineup, but a guy like him who could hit ninth and be a second leadoff guy and give you speed, the ability to steal bases and generate some offense from that ninth spot as you turn the lineup over, that's the sort of guy I see. So when you mentioned Dyson, I think that's a guy. You know, there was a lot of discussion about Jankowski out in San Diego and some discussions about maybe making a deal that would be more involved in terms of a number of players going back and forth. But I really think that they're going to look for somebody like that that could help them in the lineup, even if it's down in the ninth spot, and give them some speed in the outfield to cover ground. And that's going to be important. I think whichever outfielder they land, I think at least going in, the idea is he has to give you something defensively as well as offensively. You know, hard to get a guy who can run and hit a lot of home runs, but I think you can find guys who can run, cover ground in the outfield, and transfer that speed into the lineup to help force the issue against opposing teams and help the offense.
I think maybe you make a good point with Jankowski making more sense in that they would have more service time with him as well. They would have more control over him going forward because the Rays probably unlikely to make a move for a guy that they're not going to be able to control down the road. And you trade some pitching for 1 year of a guy, it doesn't really fit into what they sort of tried to do. One other thing I wanted to touch on with you, Dwayne. Sam Fold had his annual wiffle ball tournament over the weekend. It raises money for type 1 diabetes. Raised more than $82,000 this year. And we actually streamed it live, some of the games here on MLB.com. I know you know Sam Fold well. Obviously, he was a fan favorite for years with the Rays, and this has really become a cool event.
Yeah, it has been. It's really great. You know, they have it at the University of South Florida here. Sam, when he was here, and obviously even when he's not a part of this ball club, is still a big part of this community. And this thing has continued to grow and become bigger every year. And he attracts some, some great names. I think Chris Archer stopped by, and Kevin Kiermaier, and former players as well. Dante Bichette's been involved, and I think you're talking about the coverage of that. Joe Maddon lends a hand to that. So it's the kind of thing that will, I think, just continue to grow. That's been the trend for this from, as you mentioned, over 80,000 this year. And I think they were up in the neighborhood of 50,000 or so a year ago. So it's perfect. It represents what Sam is all about. And I might say also, we actually utilized him on our telecast to try to break down analytics and all of that one night. And he did a great job of that. So he truly is a multi-threat, regardless of what part of this game he's around.
Yeah, great stuff, Dwayne. As always, this has been MLB.com Extras, our Rays edition. Thanks to Dwayne Statz for filling in for Bill Chastain. I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time. Hey, everyone. Tim McMaster here, along with our MLB.com Red Sox reporter, Ian Brown. And Ian, the winter meetings are over. Everybody's kind of returned to their home cities, and when you look at winners from the 2016 winter meetings, you have to include the Red Sox in the discussion, probably also the Chicago White Sox, and part of that is because of the deal they came together for, maybe even the Yankees as a winner too, but the Red Sox certainly added the most when you talk about Chris Sale and Mitch Moreland and Tyler Thornburg filling all the holes. So it's Chris Sale basically 1 week later as we record this podcast. You're back in the Boston area. How is Red Sox Nation kind of taking to that deal and what this rotation is right now?
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement here in Boston. And I think certainly when you look at the 30 teams at the winter meeting, nobody gave them a better chance in 2017 to be an even better team than the Red Sox with the moves they made. Three really significant moves that are all in the span of a day. And, you know, Chris Sale, foremost among them. And, you know, he just gives everybody a different outlook on the Red Sox because, you know, a lot of fans thought they needed another pitcher. And Dave Dombrowski never came out and said it, but, you know, in hindsight, he definitely thought that by this move. He gives up a couple of top prospects to get Chris Sale, and suddenly you just have a guy who, you know, no matter who pitches opening day, whether it's Price, Porcello, or Sale, you get the sense that you know, Sale's going to be the real ringleader of this pitching staff. And, you know, he's the guy with the best stuff. He's back in the prime of his career. And, like I said, there's a lot of excitement here about the addition of Chris Sale.
Opening day starter is certainly an interesting conversation. To me, I think it has to go – I think it goes to Porcello simply because he's the guy that won the Cy Young Award last year and he's the guy that was on the roster. But we'll certainly see, and it'll be interesting as we get closer to that. Maybe spring training has a say in that. As far as Mitch Moreland goes, certainly a good move. He wasn't great at the plate a year ago, but he won the Gold Glove. And that stands out to me as maybe the thing that really the Red Sox were looking for. Hey, Hanley Ramirez was great considering what he had to do to become a first baseman in 2016. But to add a guy that against right-handed pitching, so the majority of the time he'll be in there at first base, that won a Gold Glove, what that does defensively to also help out this pitching staff is huge.
Yeah, I think it's a great move, you know, for a couple reasons. First of all, it keeps Hanley off his legs a lot. You know, and Hanley did do a great job of staying healthy last year and having a big year. But, you know, this is a guy who's had a history of some leg problems in the past. And it'll be good just for Hanley to be able to focus the most of his time on hitting because he's such a dangerous hitter, as we saw last season. And Moreland will give them a nice lift defensively. Offensively, he's intriguing if he can learn how to hit to the opposite field a little bit more. Fenway could be a real value add for him. And, you know, you're not looking for Mitch Moreland to replace David Ortiz, really. You know, you're just looking for him to be, another nice piece in that lineup. And I think that was another strong move by the Red Sox to get Mitch Moreland on a, you know, very reasonable cost acquisition there.
When you look at this roster a week ago and today, Ian, a week ago, when you look at third base, you had Travis Shaw coming off a pretty good year, a great first half at least, and then a good year overall. You had Yoan Moncada and the future third baseman it seemed like in this organization. And then you had the question mark of what could you get from Pablo Sandoval. So that question mark is now a need. They need to get something from Pablo Sandoval. That's maybe the one negative when you look at all these moves is suddenly there is a giant question mark at third base. I know the team has said all the right things, and I know the pictures certainly show that Sandoval's in shape. But you think behind closed doors, how concerned is this team about what Panda can bring them in 2017?
You know, I don't think they're overly concerned. Look, Travis Shaw had a great April and early May last year, but, you know, other than that, they really didn't have much offense at third base last year. And, you know, you can mix Brock Holt in there still. So I think, I think that they're cautiously optimistic that Sandoval can give them a real lift this year. They don't need him to have his best years with the Giants. They just need him to have one of his average years with the Giants. And he is in terrific shape, and you hope for his sake he can sort of keep that weight off this time. He's battled with that a lot in his career. And I think this whole thing has been a humbling experience for him. And now he has a golden opportunity to sort of get his job back. So I think a lot of us, it's going to be one of the stories of spring training for the Red Sox, is to see how Sandoval looks, at the start of camp.
We wouldn't want you to have nothing to talk about in spring training either, Ian. So key there. And it is key, I think, that Rafael Devers was not traded. And it seems like if you're going to deal Moncada, you got to keep the other guy who could eventually become a third baseman. And the way he progressed in 2016, I know it seems like he's still a couple of years away, but if he has a year like he did in 2016, again in 2017, is this a guy we could be talking about as far as a September call-up?
Could be, yeah. I mean, we'll have to see. I think the one thing maybe they learned with Moncada a little this year is, you know, you got to be careful not to rush these guys. There was a lot of excitement about Moncada, and he came up and he sort of got exposed because he wasn't done from a development standpoint, and maybe skipped a step there with him and thought after how smoothly Benintendi came up that Moncada could do the same thing. So I think, they'll see if there's a need with Devers and how it everything progresses with him. But certainly they love this guy. They love his power. They think that he's going to be a real impact player for this team at some point, but he's a blue chip prospect now. So I think that you got to hold on to him now because you've traded a lot through your farm system over the last year, and hope for the best with Rafael.
When you look at this team and the winter meetings as a whole, Ian, the Rule 5 draft is usually kind of an afterthought for a lot of teams. But an interesting choice by the Red Sox as they go ahead and they select Josh Rutledge in the Rule 5 draft. And that's not the kind of name you usually see go in the Rule 5 draft. A lot of times it's a double-A or triple-A pitcher or a low-level pitcher that you got to bring up and keep on your roster. And maybe he throws hard so teams think there's a chance at that. Or you're filling out depth maybe in the outfield. But here the Red Sox go and they bring back a guy that they had. Why did this shake out the way it did, I guess, that the Red Sox had Josh Rutledge, they non-tender him, and then they select him in the Rule 5 draft?
Yeah, it's just the way they looked at the roster earlier in the offseason. They didn't necessarily know if he was going to fit. They did make him a contract offer at one point, and the teams couldn't agree to terms there. And then he goes to Colorado. The Rockies leave him unprotected there in the Rule 5. And then, the Red Sox look at their team, and John Farrell and Dave Dombrowski talked the other day and said, the way this roster is constituted, what's the one thing we need right now? And John Farrell thought it was really a right-handed utility man. And they really liked Rutledge last year, and he was off to a very good start for them last year until he hurt his knee and was gone for the last, I think it was 3 or 4 months of the season. So they think this can be a nice final piece for the roster next year.
And certainly interesting, and it gave people something to talk about after the Rule 5 draft. You talk about what's left to do on this team, and I don't think there's a whole lot. Maybe to add some more bullpen depth. Now, Koji Uehara, it looks like, has agreed to a deal with the Cubs. That's not official yet, but Red Sox fans just kind of have to be a little sad to know that officially Koji's not going to be back. He brought so much to this team and this bullpen over the last few years.
Yeah, it's interesting. We learned that the Red Sox actually did make an offer to Koji last week before they made the Thornburg move. So they tried to get him, I think, on a little bit of a bargain there. And just couldn't come up with it. But, after they got Thornburg, Dave Dombrowski, and the Red Sox made a phone call to Koji just out of respect for him and what he's done for this franchise. There's a lot of people who are, have 2013 World Series rings because of what Koji Uehara did for that team, and nobody's ever going to forget what he did for that team. And, it was just time to move on, and now they have Thornburg, a guy who is in his prime and a lot of excitement for that move. But certainly Koji's going to be missed. He had a lot of personality. He added a lot of personality to that team.
Do you think they add another reliever as far as free agency, Ian, or do they look at what they have as far as rotational depth and guys coming up and your guys like Owens and Barnes and that kind of guy and think they have enough to fill in the bullpen?
Yeah, no, I think they feel pretty good about their bullpen right now. And as it is right now, they have more pitchers than spots. And you look at one of their starters, depending on how many starters they trade, one or two of their starters is going to have to go to the bullpen, whether it's a Drew Pomeranz or whether it's a Clay Buchholz. So they feel good about the bullpen, Tim. So they don't really look at that as a place where they have to add. They think that's all going to shake itself out. And, I have to say there's one thing the Red Sox have to do this winter. They probably have to trade one starter, whether it's Buchholz or whether it's Pomeranz or whether it's, maybe you fell high on Stephen Wright or one of those things, just so you don't have such a log jam. Maybe you can help replenish the farm system by offloading a pitcher.
Haven't heard a lot on that front as of yet. Obviously, there's still everything shaking out after the winter meetings. But it seems like maybe taking their time could be beneficial as far as trading one of those starters. The longer you wait, maybe the better options you have.
Yeah, right now the Red Sox don't feel like they need to do this right now. It's more to see how the market comes back around and what teams are going to be in need of pitching, and then maybe find yourself in a little bit of a sweet spot there to be able to unload one of those pitchers and get a good return.
Great stuff, Ian. This has been MLB.com Extras, our Red Sox edition. For Ian Brown, I'm Tim McMaster. Tune in again next time.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.